So welcome back to another conclusionary episode of Inside the Petri Dish. I'm joined by Vicky. Give us a noise.
Hello!
And Tay.
Woohoo!
Nice. So we are back, and I am back with some stuff.
Climate change.
Climate change stuff.
Yeah, tell us who you chatted to.
So I've talked to 4 people this time.
Wow.
Busy little minion.
I know. And I talked to conservationists. We had a climate change renewable energy engineer talking about her work. And we also had environmental scientist talking, and she's also a law enforcer.
Wow.
So enforces the law about rubbish and littering on the beaches of Hawaii.
Oh my god.
That sounds like a very cool job for many different reasons.
I know, mainly because of the beach.
And the sunshine.
But having the power.
I did ask if she had a gun, but no.
No, okay.
Just a litter picker. But you can still do damage with a litter.
Still a good weapon.
Yeah. Don't get on the wrong side, Tay. She'll hit you.
Okay, good to know.
I'm a nice person.
She's got hot coffee in her hand.
So, yeah, I've talked to loads of really awesome people, and the main thing that struck me from our chats was the role of conservation in climate change. So we all know, whether you agree about it, whether it's real or not, that the weather is changing. We are seeing more extreme
storms,
weather changes, the sea levels are rising, we've seen a rise in temperature, that leads to increased precipitation and things like that. So while that's all going on, there are consequences to ecosystems. And so what we often think about when we think of climate change and how this impacts on animals' lives is we think of the big fluffy animals. We think of polar bears and orangutans and pandas. And as lovely as those are, there are microscopic organisms like bacteria or plant life or things in the ocean that are being impacted on because of human life and our use of fossil fuels and plastics and things that actually are our biggest offenders in climate change. And they are most at risk from what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to Benjamin from Cardiff, which was pretty cool, down the road from us. And he set up the Seagrass Project, or Project Seagrass, sorry. And they were looking at how seagrass is our one main fighter against the effects of climate change, because it takes in so much CO2, more than the Amazonian rainforest. So, but it's the most thing that's at risk. So the thing that could be dying off is the thing that could be saving us. And
why is it at risk? Sorry.
Yeah, what that was going to be my exact question. What is the risk? Is it temperature changes? Is it
what was really interesting?
Sea levels?
What was really interesting was actually ocean acidification is beneficial to the seagrass. So they can cope in acidified oceans.
Okay.
But the problem is, is agriculture. This water that is sort of runoffs from agricultural activities is killing off the seagrass. So human activities can not necessarily, you know, the ice caps melting or things, but actual farms and things and industrial farming and chemical farms and things like that are having an impact on our oceans.
And from what I understand, ocean acidification is a result of the increased carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which then gets absorbed into the ocean. And because carbon dioxide is slightly acidic, it makes the ocean's pH more acidic.
This is why she works at Bristol and talks to children about important things.
This is good.
Yeah.
And we're even dealing with the water cycle here. This is incredible.
So is that because there's an equilibrium set up between the carbon dioxide and the water? So if the carbon dioxide in the air is higher, then it'll be drawn into the water as a source of equilibrium? Is
yeah,
right?
So the big problem with climate change is that if you think of our planet as a system, with an air system in terms of our atmosphere and a water system in terms of our oceans and our seas, a lot of the changes in temperature that are being caused by climate change is being buffeted by the ocean. So the ocean absorbs a lot of that extra temperature, and it also absorbs a lot of the extra carbon dioxide, which is why we don't see as much of a change as we should, really, based on how much the temperature globally has increased in average over the last few years. We would expect to see more extreme weather patterns, more storms, more ice melting, etc. But because the ocean is this huge, vast vat of water that just absorbs all that extra temperature, a lot of the effects of global warming are being seen under the ocean, so they're out of our view, we don't see what's going on. A lot of people live inland, in places that are completely away from the ocean, they don't interact with our seas or on oceans, and they don't see a lot of that change, which is why it's so hard to get people engaged in the problem.
And I think that came up a lot in what we were talking. I was talking to the experts about is that the scientists aren't the only people that are going to be combating climate change. We are. And what was really interesting to talk to Benjamin about was how the local communities who live by the ocean and their economic source and their source of food and things like that comes from the ocean. So having a system that's being damaged directly by them damages them, because they can't then live off that resource. And so they worked to help nurture the seagrass, and then we also talked about coral and coral reefs, and because coral reef systems are dying off, and those are very important for lots of it. I mean, everything in our ecosystem plays an important role in
it's
in
all about balance, isn't it?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, it's keeping that balance, and that's what, you know, keeps the world turning in terms of everything ticking along. And I think, you know, what Tay was saying about the oceans almost being, you know, such a defense mechanism for the planet, you know, it's bearing the brunt, and we're not actually seeing the full effects because we've got an amazing planet that is adapting and doing its very best to keep things as much at an equilibrium and in balance as it possibly can. But at some point, it's going to break.
And we are already seeing the social impact of global climate change. Environmentalism is not just about the animals, the fluffy animals that you mentioned earlier. It's also social. It affects humans too. And we've already been seeing that. So places like Bangladesh earlier this year were completely flooded. Thousands of people have been displaced out of their homes. They've had their livelihoods taken away from them. And these are people that don't have much to start with, but because they live on the coast, and their homes have been completely taken over by tidal waters rising because of climate change, they've just lost everything. And we're already seeing that in more remote parts of the world, but it's going to start moving to areas like Miami, Florida, the Caribbean, very, very soon, if not, haven't already.
And that also came up, which was something that, there was a fact that came up that had never entered my mind when thinking about climate change, was when I was talking to Adriana, who was the renewable energy engineer. She was talking about the gender gap in climate change, and that really surprised me. It's something that I've never thought of before, about how women all over the world are more likely to have interactions with fossil fuels because they do the majority of the cooking, because women are more likely to take on that role. And so they're exposed to the harmful chemicals or the harmful ramifications of being around high levels of CO2 all the time, or having to use paraffin lamps and things. And also, if girls are going out to schools to get, if the girls aren't going to schools because they're going out to collect firewood and things like that, then there's an economic disadvantage for girls and a sociological disadvantage for girls. So there's actually a gender gap in climate change as well, which is something I've never even considered.
I think, you know, when we talk about climate change, and, you know, if you watch a big successful series like Blue Planet, that's the one that springs
Blue
to mind,
Pie
which,
too.
You know, is incredible. And, you know, David Attenborough is a, you know, such a a pioneer, adventurer, all of those things, but very happy to speak out about climate change is real. And this is, we are seeing the result, you know, with the reefs and things like that. So I think we think about climate change, and our mind immediately goes to, oh, well, you know, it's the seas and it's the ice caps and, you know, certain animals can't exist in certain areas. But what then, the questions are, well, what then, you know? Okay, so if animals, if a certain type of animal can't exist in an area anymore, you know, of course it will migrate, it will move, it will try and find a new habitat that's suitable. But then what effect does that then have on the animals that are already living in that? You know, it changes one piece, has an, it's like dominoes, isn't it? You know, you start with one thing and actually it then has an effect on everything because we're all connected. Mm. And as much as, you know, we feel so removed when, you know, we're lucky, we're sat here in a lovely flat in the middle of Cardiff, you know, we're
tea
warm,
and
tea and food and electricity and all of these things. But it's very easy to sort of feel privileged and not actually think, well, my world's fine. You know, I can still put fuel in the car and I can get to work and I have power at home and my kids go to school and all of these things. It doesn't really impact us. And like you were saying, it's the people living in those areas, the fishermen, the people living on, you know, lovely
coastal
remote islands and
yeah,
things like that are seeing the effects. But why aren't we listening to the people on the front line and why are they not being heard? Because, again, we talked about the storms and things. And I don't know about you, but I get, obviously with my work, you know, we'll be saying, oh, you know, the weather today or the weather this week hasn't been terrible and Storm Brian's on the way and Storm This isn't doing this. And, oh, isn't it terrible what's happened? Has it swept across this country? But no one's saying, well, okay, but why? You know, it's almost... Now press coverage, media coverage is, oh, isn't the weather dreadful? But no one's actually saying, okay,
because
but what's going to happen? And what are these storms going to get worse? And in terms of, the like you're saying, people are losing everything. And how are we dealing with that? So I think climate change, we almost box it in, oh, that's what the environmentalists talk about. And that's what people that are interested in animals and conservation talk
people
about.
People who
but,
wear, like... trousers made of hemp talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
With climate change, it's so easy to feel so lost because it is so such a huge problem and there's so many different parts to it. There's not just fossil fuels, but there's plastic pollution, there's overfishing, there's hunting, so many different facets to the problem. And I think it's very easy to people for people to feel really overwhelmed and think, okay, I can't actually make a difference, so I'm just not gonna do anything because whatever I do, it's not going to change the problem.
And it's terrifying.
Like, it is, it really is.
Mentally think, okay, there is this problem that's going on and it's beyond my control is what people think.
Mm.
I can't help put a dent in this. And that's one of the things that really came out of a lot of the interviews actually, was how the scientists who were working on conservation and environment have actually looked and thought, God, I've got to change my lifestyle.
But it's really not. You might think, you know, you're doing something really simple like carrying around a reusable water bottle or taking out a tote bag when you go shopping. It feels like it's too easy of a fix to solve such a big problem, but if everyone did it, it would make such a massive difference.
Yeah, or like not using plastic straws when you go to the pub, or like we were talking about the tote bags and even things like looking at your toothbrush or looking at the plastics in your home, what you're using, or starting to cycle to work rather than driving, and all of those things add up.
Yeah.
And it's not beyond our control. And one of the things that I talked to conservationist Chrissy about was how she has made a move to what they call a zero waste lifestyle. She's transitioning to try and limit the amount of waste that she's producing. So, but there are limitations because we live the world we live in and it's very biased towards quick fashion, quick food, this, that. It's really
we need
hard.
An instant
single
fix.
Use everything.
Well, it's like, you know, if someone is deciding to quit smoking and, you know, you try and quit smoking, you cut down, you think, oh yeah, I'm gonna quit, you lost a few days, you start back up again, or, you know, something in your day-to-day life is a trigger, it's a habit, and plus, you know, you feel that you need it in your life, and also you go, oh, it's too hard, and actually it's gonna take too much effort, I might as well carry on until I've got more time to focus on it. You know, there's all of these reasons, and I think, again, it's that well, if I can't just stop it like that, and it's going to take all of this effort, why should I? It's not going to really affect me, and it's not, maybe, you know, my kids are going to be all right. It's going to be in the generations to come, and I won't be around then, so what does it matter? Mm-hmm. And I think there is this, you know, we play it out in our head and think, well, yeah, I know I should carry around a water bottle, and I should, you know, stop using
plastic
bags. But
that mentality is exactly why I think we should be lobbying our governments and our organisations and the people that produce all of our commodities for us to make the changes from the start of their manufacturing process, so that it enables people to make that decision, which is so much easier because they already have that choice of, okay, I can go to a supermarket and I can recycle my plastic bottles and I'll get a voucher or etc., like they do in many countries in Europe. Mm. And earlier this week, there's been a petition launched to try and lobby MPs to start introducing some kind of tax or some kind of levy for plastic pollution, to try and get manufacturers to start using more, you know, environmentally friendly materials and start looking into research. And funding is such a big problem.
Well, it comes down to money, surely. And I think, again, it's that whole thing of, if it was, there was a financial incentive, then of course people would resort. But where's the money going to come from? And like you say, it's a case of lobbying manufacturers and asking them to make something more affordable and making a cheaper alternative, which is actually environmentally friendly. But mm. I think, again, we live in a world where if something is of benefit and we think, hey, do you know what, that's such a good idea, people just want to profit off it. Mm. And I think it's that, you know, how many times do you go into the supermarket and the organic stuff is way more expensive. Mm. You know, you go, if gluten-free food is way more expensive. People are profiting off the fact that, oh, well, actually, this seems to be a bit of a fad now. Mm, so, yeah. You know, we're not just dealing with celiacs. We're dealing with people that, you know, want to go gluten-free.
It has kind of become an Instagram trendy thing now to be environmentally friendly.
Yeah, but people, again, it's that whole thing of, well, if I can make a profit off it. It's like we were discussing with the vaccines and things. You know, these companies, okay, if they do come up with a vaccine to cure a certain type of cancer, then are they going to slap a massive price tag mm-hmm. on it? Because actually it's so, you know, it's like gold dust. And
that's what we mentioned, what I talked to Conservation Chrissy about was there is a huge a gap for people on low incomes to be able to access environmentally friendly products, because we were talking about how a couple of days ago I was brushing my teeth and I thought, God, my toothbrush is made of plastic. How long's that going to be around for? Because you think dentists recommend you change a toothbrush very regularly. Mm-hmm. Well, how many toothbrushes is that like being thrown away?
Yeah, even our clothes. I'm wearing polyester trousers, and there was a research paper published not too long ago that suggested every time you put polyester clothing into the wash, it releases tens of thousands of microfibers into the waterways that just never biodegrade, and they get eaten by plankton in the mm-hmm. ocean. And
but then polyester clothing and plastic toothbrushes are so much cheaper than good quality
bamboo toothbrushes.
Or like, yeah, bamboo toothbrushes, like 15 quid.
Yeah.
And you have to change them every 3 months, or trousers that are like organic cotton.
Yeah.
There's the problem there, both for companies taking advantage, but also lower income people being able to access the things that they should be able to access. Mm. And one of the things that we discussed was how they were changing their lifestyles, and veganism came up, which is quite a trendy topic. If you think about the gluten free and everything, and I'm vegan,
you don't have to apologise.
I'm sorry, everyone. I've let you down. I am anemic.
As the comments come in, I knew it.
Yeah, she's pale. She's anemic. She's vegan. No, I'm just
eat
ginger.
I'm pale, and I was ginger before going green. So, you know, it's and I'm not vegan, so, you know, it's fine.
You ginger?
I was.
This is a revelation.
But more my ginger hair went grey the first. So, you know, is that... Maybe we need to send you out to investigate that. Why does ginger, you this know, red pigmented hair turn ginger?
Other than a grey family Christmas, this is the first time that ginger people will outnumber someone in a room.
look, the pale skin and freckles, I can prove it. But,
You had me fooled.
We've gone slightly off topic again. But... Is it, you know, I know we were talking about the cost and I mean...
Veganism's expensive.
Yeah, and I think, again, we're back to, you know, we want to eat... I think with this one, you know, we talk about now, well, you know, it's about educating, you know, those families and those people that, you know, don't necessarily know that, you know, you need to have less sugar and more fruit and veg in your diet. And, you know, it's, you know, when we go to the supermarket, it seems that all the... multi-packs of this and that and the other are the ones on offer, and actually for those people who can't afford to buy organic this and organic that, well, again, we're back to them, well, why should I bother, because it's going to cost me, you know, it's not realistic.
And that's the thing, veganism is actually really affordable if you're mindful of what you buy, you plan in advance, once you establish you overhaul your cupboards, basically, then you're fine. Because you're not buying things like meat, which are really expensive, and cheese, which is also really expensive. Mm. But even I can't afford to buy organic everything. I do as much as I can, and that's what I have to settle with.
Well, is that it? Is it the fact that actually if we all just did as much as we can,
I think so.
That's within our budget, within, you know, you're thinking of busy parents, family of kids, you know, even a single person who is a professional, is working all the hours that, you know, they can, you know, life is stressful, grabbing things on the go.
Yeah.
You know, it's not always, we can't always be, all right, I'm going to overhaul my lifestyle, but actually is it the case of, do you know what, actually if I just do this, this and this and I do the plastic bottle thing.
I think that's really important.
If we all just did a little bit, then surely that's going to have an impact.
Just do whatever's manageable for you. You know, if you've got one thing that you can change or swap out, that's not going to give you too much trouble and make your life a living hell, then it all adds up.
Yeah, and I mean, just reducing the amount of meat you eat every week can make a huge difference. Yeah. Because ultimately... one of the things I was talking to Benjamin about in the Seagrass project was obviously the agricultural things, because animal waste is a problem for maintaining water quality, but also animals produce a huge amount of CO2 and methane, and methane is a lot more harmful for the environment than CO2, and cows and pigs and agricultural sort of animal agriculture is one of the main sources of CO2 and methane, and that is having an impact on seagrass. So just by cutting down the number of the amount of pork, I know you had bacon recently for breakfast.
You can still have your bacon fry up on a Sunday, like you don't have to cut it out completely.
I think, you know, we did a small holding course with some friends down in Devon. And they live, you know, as pretty much as self-sufficiently as they can. Mm. And that was, I think, it's when you go and experience that it really hits home. And for us, you know, we did cut down the amount of meat that we were eating after that experience, because it's not just about the fact that, oh, you know, the pigs are gonna die and they're gonna be used for food and I don't know, I've met them, and it's not necessarily that. I think it's the fact that you go, well, let's increase welfare and animal welfare and all of these things. There is always going to be a supply for meat, and we shouldn't make farmers and people that deal with animals, we shouldn't, you know, demonize them or make them feel good, you know, because that's not the case either. But I think it's about, raising the welfare, and actually if we all did eat less meat, then maybe we would be more selective about it, and maybe those animals would have had a better life. And again, it's these small changes that then, as a whole, over time, then maybe it would be the case. There won't be such a thing of slapping a free-range label on it. Because, you know, maybe in a few years' time we'll live in a world that well, there was never anything but free range. You know, it's we put labels on things at the moment, but, but maybe we will move towards a case of it won't be free range or organic because that's just standard.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I should say, I'm a vegan. My dad makes cheese. That's his job.
Wow.
So I don't demonise people who deal with that because it's
a livelihood.
It's funded my entire life. But it's more of an environmental choice for me, is that I know the impacts of it. I mean, I was vegetarian for 12 years before I did it, so it wasn't that hard. But also, what really always comes to mind, when you were talking about free range, is my mum. My mum comes from a family of farmers, and when my mum grew up, my granddad and gran had chickens, and they were let out on the farm, and they roamed wherever. And it was like a game for the kids. They'd go and find the chickens' eggs, and they'd be down rabbit holes and in branches.
It's
and
like
things.
An Easter egg hunt. And so every day.
Yeah, every day. But no chocolate afterwards.
Just breakfast.
Yeah, just breakfast. And so a few years ago, my mum had the realisation that that's not what free range chickens means.
Mm.
And it really, like,
so they're
shocked
still in a cage,
her.
Just in a bigger cage.
They get 3 feet squared per chicken. That's not a lot, really, and that's considered free range.
Mm.
So I think what came out of this discussion and the discussion that I had with the experts is that it's not just scientists that can make a difference for climate change, it's us as well. And I think that's a really nice way to end the podcast, is that we all think about the little things that we can do, not necessarily huge things, just the small ways we can change our lifestyle to make the planet last a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Because it's not like we don't know. This is a topic, you know, when we spoke about vaccinations, there's some ignorance within that. There's a lack of knowledge. There's a lack of resource. But with this, I think we all are aware of climate change.
There are people that like to pretend it's not happening.
Yeah, but we do know what we should be doing. We do know that we're polluting, you're doing various things. But actually, so with this one, it's more about that motivation to do more, but do as much as we can and hope that we make the planet a better place.
Go forth, people, and make the planet a better place. Nice way to end the podcast. So thanks for joining us again, and stay tuned for next time.